I'd like Greta to say something about the criteria for emergence. It's at least, I think, a defensible thing to say. Whether or not it's adequate requires further scrutiny. But there's, let me contrast two different cases, one of which Lucien and I were arguing bitterly, over or we were trying to hear one another, is actually what was going on. Anyway, Lucien was using the phrase and move to say, this is nothing but a shorthand for, meaning that the predicate that was being utilized could be set into one-to-one correspondence, I suppose he meant, with some sort of finite list of lower-level language terms, which is the classical notion of a reduction. Okay? And indeed, he was trying to show that my arguments about Darwinian natural selection and so on could be reduced, and that was his side of the argument. I was trying to say, and I want to see what you do with this. Okay. Well, so there's a little branch point here. What are the grounds, and how does one analyze the grounds for the introduction of new predicates on quotes a higher level? Whatever in the world you mean by that. So let me bring back the example of your heart because it's so simple. Okay. So we distinguish among the causal consequences of the heart, the pumping of blood, precisely because it's for virtue of that causal property that the heart was selected, and that's why there are hearts in the biosphere, in the universe. Okay? So there's a causal account. Hi, Jerry, you just need it. There's a causal account, okay, of why something comes into existence. You know, hearts have come into existence. And it seems to me that the fact that there's a causal account of entities at quotes their own level, that is to say, I think in order to play the Darwinian game, you have to assert that there are self-reproducing things, that some of them are better at it and some of them are worse at it. And the ones that have hearts that work are better at it, and that's why there are hearts. That's sort of the essence of the argument. And I think it's legitimate, and this is where Lucien and I disagreed last night, and I don't know where we are this morning. I think that the introduction of predicates on, quote, the higher level needs to have, underwriting it, something like a causal powers that somehow buried in the legitimacy of using this higher level. So that's when it's not just a shorthand for, because there's a new causal power. There really are self-reproducing entities, and Darwin's notion of natural selection is now appropriate. Okay? If you don't have self-reproducing entities, Darwin's notion of natural selection isn't appropriate. It doesn't apply to the world. Okay. So I'm wanting to, so sort of in summary, I'm wanting to say we've got to distinguish between predicates that get introduced but are nothing but shorthand for, and the cases and what the criteria are for introducing predicates that are on their own level. Yeah. And then I wonder about, you know, then I have not thought hard about what it would mean to try to quote to reduce them. See, I think you can't. Because you need to have reference to self-reproducing entities.
Yeah. Let me just make a comment about this. It seems to me that the key function of assent to some higher level language, which I think is specifically what's involved, is that there is some simple formulation available at the higher level that is not in contradiction, of course, with anything going on at the lower level. So there's no sort of...
Right. There's no mystical...
Yeah, that's nothing. Yeah, that's right. The reality is all there at the level of the atoms and the molecules and so
sure.
forth. But it's impenetrable, the point that you were making. I mean, one can't work for this. Or the sort of work that one can do at that level is not germane to biological systems. It's germane to the structure of the hydrogen atom. It's something simple like that. So the simplicity becomes available. It becomes possible, and I, me, I think, I'm not sure if you've expressed puzzlement at this or not, or whether your puzzlement is more directed to the lower level, but whether puzzling or not, it turns out to be possible at the high level, in with huge collapse into simple idioms, simple combinatorics, simple deductive arguments, to get at features of the world that we are interested in. And that fact, the fact that one thereby can arrive at simple algorithms with enormous data compression, I think that's how I would paraphrase your talk of causal powers.
Hmm. Which would support Lucian's view, I think.
Well, I don't know if it would.
I think the crucial issue is this. So the statement, the reason there are arts is because arts become blurred. So you make a statement. I don't disagree with that statement. At some level, the question is, what is the ontological significance of that statement? And I think it's almost just ontologically true. But is it ontologically true in a fundamental way? It isn't the fundamental ontology, the ontology of the underlying physics. I think that's what the disagreement is. And it's the underlying, it's the ontology of the underlying physics that's driving the whole thing. But you can construct at some high level sentences of this type which are still true.
I'm on your side then. No, I think I disagree with that, because it seems to me that if you take seriously what I was just saying earlier, it all means don't, perfectly entitled to reject it, but if it's true that the notion of object arises in its most precise form in language, then it matters crucially what language is being used. And if it's further true that, I mean, in a certain sense, that there's no correct language, meaning the language that gets the real objects, the one and only set of objects, because the real language is ultimately mathematical physics, isn't it?
Well, let me just interject here, because you asked what puzzlement. Okay, for me, and the reason why I think this discussion is relevant, okay, we're all comfortable, I mean, you're clarifying it a great deal, but we're all comfortable with the idea that, quote, the real thing is something in physics, you know, some particles moving around, bouncing off of each other, or some graphs evolving, or something like that. And that's unproblematic. There are, quote, laws operating then, and then things, quote, emerge. And it's very helpful to clarify how they emerge and what it means that all of a sudden there are things in the world about which new laws apply that didn't apply before. The scary thing and the frightening thing is the accumulation of evidence that the things that we thought of as the laws of physics, quantum field theory, general relativity, must be emergent, okay, from something else in precisely the same sense. Okay. Our difficulties actually carrying that out. Okay. And the suggestion that the belief that under it all is something that just doesn't change, okay, that our, quote, the little game or the little laws, okay, is an excess baggage that we're carrying with us that's preventing us from completing the program of making a quantum theory of space-time or cosmology. Okay. That's and that's the question of focus. That is, do we, you know, if you can have one emergent level which gives rise to another emergent level and so forth, okay, and if we're, you know, if what we think of as so far most fundamental, okay, seems to be good theoretical evidence and observational evidence, is emergent. Okay. For example, and this is a point about cosmology that I think isn't stressed enough, I mean, the belief that the need for inflation at an early time is a statement that at some early time there were some laws operating which are different than those operating now. Now, maybe we can make a story about how there was a phase transition and so forth, but...
I wouldn't agree with that assessment. I mean, inflation is not It's not radically different.
It's not radically different, but we have the inflaton does not. We have no experimental evidence or need for an inflaton in present.
No, but now you're asking about how do you get inflaton?
No.
As opposed to.
I'm making the statement deliberately provocative. That is, it's perfectly consistent with what we know, just to say there was some laws of physics happening in the first 10 to the minus something of the second, and then other physics took over. Now, we may have a story about how they're the same physics, although we're missing it, you'd agree. So anyway, I'm just trying to provoke a little bit the discussion. This is the reason for discussing, you know, issues of objects, reductionism emergence here, not just to have that and clarify that discussion, which I agree still needs work, but because of the possibility that the underlying assumption that we just get, you know, we peel all the layers of the onion off, and then there is the piece of gold, which is the permanent real laws, that seems to be going a bit too far for comfort. So now let me go on over. Jaron was next.
Okay.
And then let me just say, in a few minutes, I'm going to cut this whole discussion and go to Ola.
Okay. I'll try to be as brief as I can. The first thing, this might have been said before I arrived, so I apologize if I'm inadvertently repeating something that was already on the table, but if you take what I understand to be Lucien's position, and maybe Simon's, that you have a complete and sufficient description of the universe by looking at the fundamentals, then you have to explain how it's possible to refer to these other ontological entities at all, and you end up taking a philosophically dualist position of some kind, which I don't necessarily object to. And on odd days of the week, that's the position I take, actually, for various other reasons. Because that's not the only argument for dualistic position. There are other ones that might even be stronger. But there's an alternative. Let me try a different one that's a bottom-up one. And here I'm going to subject Lucien to listening again to the argument I made last night, which I don't think convinced him, but I'd like to share it with other people anyway. So I'd like you to hold in your minds two universes we're going to compare. Both of them are the sorts of universe that Lucien is talking about, a Newtonian 6D configuration space. The first one is a boring universe. What we'll call it the boring universe. It has only it only has mild gradients, and it has the property that you can interpolate between points on it. They're all available. Two similar paths are otherwise similar, and so everything's gradual, very smooth. And now let's think about a universe that's we'll call the complicated universe, which is like our universe, that has machines and brains and computer chips and evolution and all of these things. In this universe, there are points on the configuration space that in practice can never be reached because they've been precluded by structures.
Yeah, I heard you say that over breakfast. Can you please unpack that?
Okay. It's you cannot have I don't know. There's a world of there's a world of absurdities. You can't have computers perform impossible algorithms, for instance. You know, I mean, once you have structures, there are things that just can't come about, and so you start to have holes in your configuration space. And so now you have a configuration space that starts to look a little like Swiss cheese, and now you have passages between the holes. And so here's what I'd suggest is that if you're a scientist who believes, as Lucien does, and you happen to be in this other universe that now has holes in it, you're put in the position where you no longer have the ability to make interpolations anywhere. Sometimes you might hit a hole, or even worse, you might hit some sort of a fork in the road between holes, and an error could send you down one or the other. And as soon as you're in this world, then you enter the category where small perturbations can have enormous effects, and you cease to be able to calculate unless you do it perfectly with reliability, and which is exactly the problem we have with complex systems, because that's more like the world we live in than the boring world. And so this is my pragmatic argument against Lucien's position that it would put physicists in such a world out of work because they couldn't calculate. But also, it shows that the the holes are really there. That essentially where the reason the higher ontologies arise is because there are universes where you don't have this smooth, equally available and equally connected configuration space. And so the holes are the ontology.
Okay, so I might have slightly misrepresented my position earlier. So I was arguing contingent on a belief in an underlying Newtonian type ontology, such as where you have a 6n directional configuration space evolving in time, which is incidentally not, so certainly that's not true, isn't it? You know, physics is true, but I don't even believe.
So far as we know.
But I don't even believe that ontology is true. I mean, Simon might, because he believes in Manuel's interpretation, where you have something which is quite similar. I personally don't believe that necessarily. So the reason for this debate was, is it the case that even if you have the ontology, you still have to introduce higher order concepts which have ontological fundamental significance? And that was the point of difference. Which is an interesting question, because if you have to, that even if you have this underlying ontology, that then you have a problem. But if you don't have the underlying ontology, then the question is moot anyway. I mean, you may well need higher order concepts. In answer to this particular thing, if I do take this fundamental underlying ontology picture that's implicit in Newton or Manuel's, then I don't think I care. I don't think I care if it's difficult to do calculations. If I'm just concerned about what's ontologically real, this sort of practical considerations don't really concern me terribly.
But you would be a bum in an alleyway unemployed, because any perturbation at all would ruin your physics, so there would be no physics, because there'd be no verification of any experiment.
I think every physicist has to be prepared to be a bum in an alleyway. That's where their convictions take them.
But I declare that the fact that there is physics at all makes your position unlikely.
What I go into about later is exactly the opposite point of view, where you try to get to grips with things in operational terms, exactly in the way you were referring to.
I'm growing more sympathetic to your view, which I dislike. So let me try to argue against myself and see where it gets us. Okay, could one describe a self-reproducing entity in the language of, let's call it, classical Newtonian physics? Well, it seems to me that you could. I mean, there's nothing wacky about that. It's just that there's this combination of things that has the property that, in its dynamical behavior, it makes more of itself. Now, what are we going to do with the following fact? Once there are reproducing things, and let me say in the higher level language, that have heritable variation, but presumably we could say that too.
Okay. Sorry,
heritable variation.
Okay.
Once those conditions are met, then the Darwinian mechanism of natural selection comes into play. Yeah. And I certainly want to say that it's causally efficacious. Now the question is, ontologically, this comes back, because Simon's view will be, I think, that there's an enormous compression of language and efficiency to be gained in that language by using the higher level language of organisms and natural selection. And I think Lucian's position would be something like what Stu says are the causal powers of natural selection can be unpacked into a claim about the survival, the probabilities of propagating certain of these self-reproducing things as a function of the properties that they happen to have. And so you could get away with a complete translation backwards. I think that's your position,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
If you believe in this underlying ontology.
Yeah.
I'm going to be the background. One little point, and then we go to
just very quickly, if you have a sequence of self-reproducing and evolving organisms that Stu is interested in, you can think of it as a series of experiments, just like the physicists, a method experiment. And so if any perturbation would ruin the experiments, then you really can't have evolution in the world you describe.